I think the thing that always makes me want to take it back into my own hands is the fact that it represents me, and I know why the song was written, and I know all the different factors. So how could anybody else possibly choose the right size font?
Hello and welcome to episode 34 of Attention Engineer. Kid, a music producer, songwriter and solo artist making music as Penfriend and beaming into your ears from my studio The Launchpad in Bristol. You can find me around the internet at Penfriend Rocks. Thanks for joining me today as I continue my mission to encourage creativity in every listener by sharing conversations with some of the artists I admire the most. This podcast is made possible by The Correspondence Club. Big love to every member tuning in. It's all so much better with a bit of light and sunshine, isn't it? It's been a productive and pretty happy week here in the Launchpad, which coincides very neatly with the conversation I'm sharing with you today. In the last episode, I talked to Leela Moss of The Duke Spirit about how meditation can create a tiny space between something happening and my reaction to that thing. And so linked to that, I've been thinking a lot about ways to maintain and increase that mental space, to be able to lift my head up from that Sisyphean idea of forever pushing the boulder up the hill. It's so easy to get stuck in the daily struggle of getting things done, but only by looking up and past that never-ending to-do list can progress be made on the bigger things. At the moment, I'm really into the idea of goals being my compass, with my daily, weekly, and quarterly systems taking me in that direction, ideally avoiding stress and burnout along the way. It's all a process, but I was particularly delighted when Eliza and I got to chatting about designing an ideal day, with a place for admin, art, and physical and emotional well-being. That's the dream. We also talked about how the pandemic has forced Eliza to deal with her true nature, the self-imposed pressure of picking the right-sized font, EPs versus albums as an artistic statement, building a sustainable music career while always being willing to get a job, plus messy desktops, time block planning, and how philosophy can feed into songwriting. Equally at home perusing murder ballads and decoding Arabic scales, Eliza's singular artistry is the product of an incredibly diverse and borderless upbringing. Raised across 7 countries, she's the daughter of a Sudanese astrophysicist and a Scottish diplomat. A multilingualist with a philosophy degree, Eliza studied jazz at London's Guildhall before self-producing her first EP. Her next 2 critically acclaimed EPs were championed by tastemakers such as Beats One's Zane Lowe and BBC Radio One's Hugh Stevens, setting the stage for an artist thriving on producing work abundant in raw emotion and expansive instrumentation. In 2018, Eliza released her debut album, Future. Named a rising star of 2019 by the BBC, her reputation for powerful live shows has seen her touring extensively, taking in the UK, Europe and the USA, playing dates with the likes of Kay Tempest, O Wonder, Lucy Rose, James Bay and Turin Breaks. She's also collaborated with award-winning poet Anthony Anaxagoru and contemporary jazz group Hansu Tori, and is a founding member of female arts collective Girls, Girls, Girls. Most recently, Eliza's excellent cover of Nina Simone's Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood appears in the gripping and mysterious Netflix series Behind Her Eyes, bringing her work to a whole new audience. Nice one, Eliza. Now it's time to share my conversation with Eliza Shaddad. Here we go. Please, could you introduce yourself?
Of course. Hi, my name is Eliza Shaddad. I'm a singer, songwriter, band leader, and based in Cornwall.
I was wondering where you were because I saw some photos that looked very like windy beach recently. Mm.
Yeah, that's and my that's... like daily. Actually, I say that's my daily. I've not left the house in about 5 days.
Oh, really?
Which is a crime considering the location. But yeah, I've been productive, so that's good. But yeah, it's beautiful around here.
To give a bit of context for listeners from the future, we are having this chat in the third week of the third UK lockdown. So I was interested to know how that's been going for you. I know that's a massive question, but it looks like you've been keeping yourself really busy and doing lots of online things. So how have you been embracing slash dealing with this pandemic?
I would say the three lockdowns have been quite different actually for me. The first one, we were on tour, we'd had to come home, started off, I was ill at the very beginning of it, I think quite early on. And it was this weird sort of juxtaposition of all this like energy that I'd kind of been storing up to be playing the shows and excitement to finally build up to our biggest ever London show and all of that and all the stress and headaches of having organised that. So the kind of deflation and worry about my band and all the crew and everyone that had been involved, coupled with, I guess, the kind of growing sense of fear about everything from watching the news. At that stage, I was watching the news three times a day. And coupled with this kind of sense of coming home and having all this time and freedom to write. And I was due to start work on slash finish up the next album when we finished tour anyway. So I kind of just came home in effect a couple of weeks early and had like yawning chasms of space in front of me within which to have no excuse not to finish another album. And it was, first one was quite hard. I think there's so many ups and downs and it was all kind of, I don't know, there was this sort of circling worry around everything. And it was interesting. I'd just gotten married, actually. I got married at the end of February in America, and so it was me and my new husband alone in our house trying to work on music, trying to be productive, not expecting to spend every hour of every second of every day with each other. And so it was all quite intense, and like there was no, you know, there was no hiding from, like, I don't know, my moods, I guess. If I was having like, if I just woke up feeling awful for whatever reason, it's like, ah, oh, there's no distractions, there's no one to go and see, there's not really anyone to put on like a brave face for. So we were both just kind of dealing with our true natures, which was which has bonded us closer but was definitely interesting in terms of dealing with it sometimes. So I guess the first lockdown was really solitary, some nice moments like seeing spring come out here and kind of really falling in love with my area and how isolated it is, actually. That was really lovely. Then the second lockdown, I had quite a lot of sort of work, like filming work especially, booked in, that was allowed under the conditions. So luckily some of it still went ahead, and it was really productive in a kind of visual sense. Like we filmed 4 music videos and a like behind the scenes documentary about the album in 6 days, and I did some work with Sky Arts for a program about musicians during Corona, and it felt like, I actually felt like I'd never worked so many hours in the day, so that was quite a change. And then this lockdown, this lockdown's all about tying up loose ends. I feel like last lockdown I was so busy I didn't have time to think about how I felt about stuff. And this lockdown, I finished the album. It's just finished mixing. Today it gets started with the masterer. So I feel like it's all about tying up the loose ends, the artwork that I've been tinkering with for 6 months. Like, it needs to be finished this week. And I think that in a strange way, I almost feel, I'm starting to feel quite scared about when life returns to normal, how I'm going to cope with it, because like I'm sort of just keeping my head above water at the minute, and there's like nothing to do but sit at a computer and finish music or finish artwork or all of that. Like, when I actually have to go places and talk to people and meet people in person, I'm terrified about meeting people in person now.
I've become very jumpy about that. Yeah, because it's been coming up to a year, really, isn't it, since it all started. So yeah, I just passed the first anniversary of having not seen any member of my family in person.
Oh wow, my goodness, that's so long.
That's a big one. Yeah, and I said about how we're in the third week of this lockdown. I had to look that up before we spoke, because I have no sense of time left, you know, and I'm the same. I'm here making music and being at my computer and doing that kind of stuff. But so the 4 music videos, are they for this new album?
They are, yep.
That's exciting.
Yep, very exciting. And it was ambitious to film that many in that short amount of time.
That's incredibly ambitious, yeah. I admire that.
They were all quite simple. We kept it simple. And in the end, we used quite a lot of slow-mo because that meant we could film stuff at double the speed. And so we didn't have to do as many like 4-minute long takes. I worked with this girl called Jodie Cantwell, who's based up in the north near Middlesbrough. And she's just got such an incredible eye. And we kind of had the ideas vaguely sketched out beforehand, or the kind of themes or the main things to show. And luckily, because the area is so beautiful, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of Cornwall just being Cornwall, which speaks for itself, really.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, it's great you've been able to keep working with people through this, because that's hard. That's really hard. I had all these plans to do photos and videos and stuff with other people, whereas I normally do them myself. Mm. And for this record, I wanted to expand and collaborate with some people, and then this all happened. So I've just gone back to my usual way of doing it
yourself.
All myself, which is fine and everything. But there's so much.
It's a shame.
It is a shame, because you can do, you know, it's just a lot harder.
Yeah.
I enjoy the creativity, but it's harder.
Yeah. I feel like I've gotten into this slightly strange position where I've done so much myself for so long that I find it really hard to let go of stuff. Like with this artwork, I've been looking at like asking people for help with fonts and this and that. And always I'm just like, I'm just going to try it myself again now. And I think it's crazy. Like, there's got to be a point where, so I respect working with other people. And I feel like it's a shame not to pursue that if that's what you want, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. But then I don't know if it really is what I want. I think it's what I want to want, because I want to be able to be a person who delegates and collaborates and doesn't have to do every part of it.
I know, delegation.
But I love every part of it. But I'm trying to appreciate that I only have so many hours in the day. That's a very, very hard realization for me. But I'm coming around to that idea. And therefore, if there are other people who can be working on stuff at the same time, that's good.
Yeah.
But I want to do it.
Yeah.
I want to do it, though.
Yes. And it's always like, I just want to tinker with every possible possibility, you know? Like, Yeah, I think delegation would be a really good skill to learn, I think, because otherwise there just isn't enough time to work on the music.
Exactly.
And ultimately that is the bit, isn't it?
Yeah. But then I don't know, I really like having a sense of the responsibility of like sending the songs out into the world as well, and having, because I mean I have to do all the bits because there isn't anyone else at the moment. But I think even if there's possibility for teams and there's money and all of that stuff, and there's not a pandemic and you can do what you like and collaborate with people, I still think artists have that responsibility to send their songs out in the best way, you know. And I think that some artists don't seem to have any interest in that side of it. That's fine, you know, you don't have to. But for me, it's always been a big part of it, because it's like, I don't know, it's like dressing them up and sending them out, you know, going, this is who they are. Because people won't click play on something unless there's some line of copy that intrigues them, or an image or a video or something.
Yeah,
that's like the calling card, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like I think the thing that always makes me want to take it back into my own hands is the fact that it represents me, and I know why the song was written, and I know all the different factors. So how could anybody else possibly choose
the right size font? Having said that, I did employ this wonderful animator and illustrator called Marit, and she made me the Penfriend logo. And when she sent it to me, because I sent her a load of words about what I wanted to convey and stuff about me and about my songs and stuff, and she sent this thing back to me, and it's a paper boat, and I was just like, I kind of had tears in my eyes because she got it so well. So it can be done.
Yeah, it can be done. That's the thing. It can be done. And it is magic when it works.
You've been releasing music since 2012. Is that correct?
Yes. Sort of officially releasing with help, I guess, 2014. But the first EP that I ever consider an EP that I put together, which I burned onto CDs and gave a name and gave out at festivals for donations. I mean, I feel like it started there, and that was 2012.
Yeah. Okay. So you've been doing this for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a bit about how you came to writing your own music in the first place?
Sure. I loved singing and learning songs from like birth, basically. And had this weird memory for lyrics and terrible memory otherwise. So everything I heard from, I don't know, like musicals like Annie to Whitney Houston or something that my baby sister used to play, like, I'd remember every bit of it and I'd just be singing it constantly. And when I was about 8, I started writing songs for a very short period of time and then didn't do any more for another 8 years. but it kind of, I guess, opened my eyes to expressing emotion through song. Songs about unrequited love. At 8, like, I'm obviously like an emotionally slightly damaged view on love to be starting out with that stuff. But at about 16, I got a guitar and I kind of picked up and learned a few songs, and it was this crazy Russian classical guitar with like an action where the strings were honestly a centimeter away from the fretboard and the neck was like 4 inches wide, and I've got tiny hands, and I know that's not an excuse because I know so many amazing guitarists with tiny hands, but the combination of me learning and this guitar meant that I learned about 5 songs and then put it down. And then I was at uni studying philosophy and I was getting to the end of my degree and I was trying to figure out, what on earth do I want to do afterwards? And I was studying in Birmingham and I'd gone to so many different like amazing live events that I thought I really want to put some effort into this and try writing a song. And me and my sister had just shaved our heads for the fun of it. And I was dealing with what that meant in my life, basically, apart from feeling colder and like people's assumptions and that sort of thing. So the first song that I really properly wrote, I would say, was a song about having a shaved head and people's reactions to it. And it just spiraled from there. I started writing some more songs. I was going around loads of festivals at the time. So I was kind of working at festivals and starting to play them in open mic tents and that sort of thing. And from there, I guess I've just found it to be the best release of emotion, really, and such a special and cathartic way of dealing with something that's going on. Often things that I can't even really voice or express to other people in a kind of conversational non-loaded way. Like, I can take whatever is driving me mad or making me happy or whatever it is and put it down in lyrics. And that's kind of how it started, I guess. I've just carried on from there, and I'm quite an emotional person, so that's helped. Because every time I feel something quite strongly, I'm like, okay, pick up the guitar right now.
Yeah, it's really helpful, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you studied philosophy as well, because do you find that you bring that into your songs in any way?
There's a sort of reflective element of philosophy, of philosophizing, that helps you sort of look at life, I guess, from lots of different perspectives. And I think it also gives you this kind of outside perspective on what you're feeling. And I think that it means that I'm often looking for, like, how do I say it? Like, if you're making an argument in philosophy, for example, you look at it's really clear, the pros, the cons, the counter arguments, like you're going back and forth. And I feel like in a lot of the songwriting that I do, it's often looking at different perspectives of the same situation. And it might all be in my voice, but it's like, this is what I'm feeling, this is what he or she was feeling, this is how it impacted on us, this is this and this is this. And I think it I think it helps with the kind of story of things as well, because I always want there to be a kind of starting point, progression to like different sides of the argument, and then at the end a kind of conclusion about how I feel about it. I've never thought about it like that, but I think that's actually how it comes out.
Yeah. I'm interested in asking that because I feel like I've come to philosophy through writing songs in a strange way. Because it's made me really interested in other people's viewpoints and other people's ways of getting through life and what's my personal philosophy. And I've been thinking about that quite a lot over the last couple of years, especially with writing the new record and thinking about whether I have, well, I do, like what my message and what my mission is. As a songwriter, as an artist, as a human, and whether those things are all the same or not. I find that really interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Do you feel like you have a message, like a core message or a mission for your music making or just for being alive?
core mission for being alive. Yeah. I like that very much. I don't think I've ever sort of distilled it that clearly. I mean, in terms of my kind of philosophical beliefs, I think the kind of guiding thing, which I really have to remember, though it's not something that occurs to me every day, is that I believe that we are determined. So I think free will is an illusion, and I think that we are just kind of play. It's, I think we are playing out cards that have been falling since the Big Bang or before. But I feel the fact that I am choosing things so deeply, I think it's almost impossible to separate from our experience of life. Mm. And what that kind of gives me is a sense that sometimes a sense that you people feel stuff really deeply, so you should treat everybody well and how you would like to be treated. Mm-hmm. In the grand scheme of things, try not to worry about stuff too much, because, you know, if anything matters, nothing matters. Everything matters exactly the same amount, and nobody really has any choice in anything anyway. So it's kind of a, I don't know, I find that sort of helpful sometimes. Mm. And I'm not sure that exactly translates into my music, but I think there's kind of a sense of like kind of nihilism about whether anything matters in a kind of broader perspective, coupled with this, I'm feeling this emotion so intensely and it's so important that you hear about it and that I explain exactly every facet of it to you. So yeah. It's kind of a dichotomy of these two things. And in philosophy, they work. So it's just like, that's your metaphysical experience and that is your phenomenological experience. I should think about that. I feel like I would quite like a kind of mission for life.
I really enjoy having one because it makes everything very clear.
Mm. So what's yours?
Oh, that's a really good... It
feels like quite a private thing to ask. You don't have to answer.
I think one of my missions is to share the knowledge and the experience that I have to enable and encourage others to do the things they want to do.
That's very nice.
So that's one of the big reasons for doing this podcast, because I could just talk to other musicians about, you know, how great they are or how great they think they are or how, you know, perfect their lives are. I could talk to them about all of this shallow stuff and it could be a PR exercise only for both of us. Or it could be a way of connecting with other artists, especially during this time when we can't meet other people. Mm-hmm. Though the podcast was planned before the pandemic, so that wasn't the reason for it. There's a lot more value in trying to be helpful to others. And so that's one of the other big parts of my mission, is to try and be helpful. Because I think that's what we're here for, is to help each other do stuff. Mm. And this is a very tangible way that I can do that. Because I can make a podcast episode and then I can publish it and then I feel like I've done a thing.
Yeah.
Whereas with my music career in general, because I worked for so many years to get it to be my full-time job, which it now has been for a full 2 years, which blows my mind. Thank you to everyone who has made that be a thing, people who buy music. It's amazing. But that was my only plan. And so then I got to that point and then I went, well, what now though? And how do I keep this going? But also, what's it for? So what's this time best used for? Because realistically, I don't think I can churn out song after song every day, every week. I want to be intentional about my writing and about my creation of new things, but it's not like you can just do that every second of every day. Yeah. So I thought, well, what else can I do that adds to that and that helps other people in a more tangible way? And the podcast is part of that, and, you know, sharing thoughts in writing and stuff other ways. And that's I think that's the core part of my mission.
That's amazing.
And so the kinds of things I want to talk about and share, and, you know, if I'm going to spend time on the internet sharing things, I want it to be of value to others, not just a bunch of, you know, meaningless jumbled thoughts that I just churned out because I thought I needed to be on Twitter today or something.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just trying to be more intentional with my time because it's limited, and my energy because it's limited. So,
That sounds brilliant.
That's the long answer, isn't it? Sorry.
No, but I mean, really, I think really worthwhile. And I don't know, inspiring and like heartwarming to
oh thanks
to think about. Yeah, I feel like it is definitely, you know, like sort of setting intentions and being quite specific and focused on the things that you would like to, or the way you would like to be as a person as much as the things that you would like to do. Like, it's so easy.
Yeah.
I think in most jobs, but especially in this job where like the tasks are endless, like there's no, it feels like academia, like you could always be doing more. There's no like cutoff point ever. No. And it's really easy to just, spend all of your time focused on the things that you need to do rather than, you know, balance in your life and how you want your human experience to be, as opposed to just what, you know, goal markers you plan to achieve in the next 6 months via distribution networks.
Exactly. And that's the thing, because, I totally agree, because it's such an intangible kind of career in some ways, because sort of, if you're really general about it, generally, I'd love people to tell me my music's great. Right. But really, it's, if you really think about that sentence, I don't really need them to tell me. I need them to tell each other so that more and more people listen to it so that I can keep doing it. That's the real point of it. That's not achieved by me tweeting about myself constantly. That doesn't do it. What does that is creating music that is so powerful to, even if it's a small number of people, that they can't do anything but share it because it meant so much to them.
Yeah.
And so having that time to be able to create that stuff is much more important than having time to tell people about the stuff. But we still need to tell people about the stuff. Yeah. So it is this balancing thing. But I think it's, in terms of sort of deep thinking about how I'm spending my time, what are the things that only I can do and what are the things that I could potentially delegate?
We're back to delegation.
I have found nothing to delegate yet, but I hope to at some point in the future.
Yep. So,
you were saying that you released an EP and then you released stuff with Help. So how's that been going, the Help part? How's that changed things for you?
Well, so when I first, so the kind of very first like Burn CD that I kind of distributed myself aside, in 2014, I put together an EP, my first like proper EP, I guess, with like a sleeve that I paid somebody else to make rather than cutting them all out of cardboard myself. and it was an EP called January March. And kind of while I was, I think just after I'd put that out, I was playing shows in Shoreditch, I think, you know, just every show that came along. And I met my manager, and while I was with him, he set up a label called Beatnik Creative, and his name was Ali Raymond, and him and the label and everyone at the label were really lovely and really helpful and really like artist friendly, and we were kind of coming up in the industry together, I guess, like growing and learning about it. And we worked together for 6 years, and in that time we put out two EPs, Waters and Run, and my first album, Future, which came out in 2018. And it was an interesting thing because the first EP, I did everything myself for January, March. So I wrote to reviewers, I designed the packaging, I did a, you know, I got it made in Germany and sent over to me, you know, I just acted as the label, didn't bother setting up a label or anything like that at the time, but kind of went through all of those processes on a kind of very, I don't think I registered stuff with like PPL or like the things that get really complicated, but you know, actually making like making the music and then making a physical product, I got down. But I did definitely find it, I just had so many questions, you know, and I didn't really know who to ask. And I kind of felt like there were these gatekeepers and I didn't have even like access to ask people how to do stuff properly. And it felt like I just had so many questions that when I did finally start working with a manager and when they set up this label, there were a lot more answers to questions. But in reality, there were also just like 100,000 more questions because I feel like part of that, like, incapacity to delegate meant that and because I'd kind of done the first record with a lot of just on my own, basically, I like I wanted to know about every stage and I'm kind of a sponge and I want to learn everything, so I think I was probably quite annoying for a lot of the time asking every tiny question that came along. But anyway, it was really beneficial to me in many ways because they obviously had a lot of contacts and a lot of knowledge. And it meant that stuff that I didn't know about, for example, you know, Spotify playlists before everyone was talking about them. That's the kind of thing that I think they, you know, knew a nice distributor and kind of connections that I wouldn't, that I wasn't making at the time.
Yeah.
They definitely kind of put in place for me, and it was really helpful. We stopped working together nearly a couple of years ago now, and the last EP that I put out, I self-released, and was self-managing for that time, although I've recently started working with a new manager. And I actually found that I really relished being in charge of everything again in a strange way. Like, I felt like I just have to, you know, at the time everyone was like, okay, so you're going to find someone new in this. And I was like, yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, I'm going to do that. Then I was like, actually, I'm just going to get on with it and do it. and I did it, and it was great. And I felt really sort of empowered kind of doing it and like taking control of it. But it's definitely in large part thanks to all of the connections that I had made through this support system that I still had contacts. You know, I knew who I wanted to use for press and for radio and for distribution and all of that. And I did find actually that self-managing at this stage of my career compared to self-managing at previous stages of my career was wildly different. Like, do you know like computer desktops, right? Mine's always really clean. I'm always really organized about it. And over the last couple of years, like, I think I used to take the mickey out of my last manager, because I remember seeing a screen once and it was like covered in stuff, and I was like, that is terrifying. How is that possible? Oh my god, doesn't it just like fill you with dread every time you open your computer? And then recently I was like, Eliza, your computer is in exactly the same state. You totally understand. It's no more than you deserve for taking the piss out of anybody else for basically being that busy.
Yeah.
So it's been really interesting, you know, working with different people, working alone, and I think there's definite kind of, you get different things from both bits, but I think ultimately moving forward, it definitely helps time-wise to be able to focus on the bits that you want to, whether that's the music or the artwork or whatever it is, if you have some people around that you can delegate to and work with, you know.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. I think things have changed a lot in the time since you started and since I started. So I put my first album out in 2010 and yours was 2012 for the EP. And I've always released my own stuff. But I remember that right at the beginning, there was very little information about how to do these things and you kind of had to cobble it together. Mm. And it seemed a bit like people were really surprised and looked down on you or on me. It felt like, for doing things myself, even though it was a clear choice I had made and a clear choice I continue to make to do it myself.
Yeah.
I prefer to do it this way. It makes more sense. And especially with, you know, a reasonable audience now, it doesn't make any sense to give all the money to someone else for the work that I've done. So it doesn't make any sense. Management and radio and press and all that is a completely different story. Of course, that could be incredibly beneficial. Mm. But it's so interesting how it's changed. And it's really cool to hear that you, even at the start, even though you may have had designs on having managers, labels and things like that, you still were interested in how it was done. Because I think it's really dangerous when the power is given to somebody else, even if the power is with a good person. I don't mean that everyone's evil and trying to, you know, steal off your thing. It's not like that at all. But just to not understand how any of it works, I think is a dangerous thing, because you just don't know anything. I think knowledge is power.
Yeah.
So
it's a business. You run a business at the end of the day, like, and if you're not interested in any of the business side of things, then you're like, God hope you have the best, most trustworthy, most loving people around you who want nothing more than to support you throughout your entire life and break their backs for you. But like, that's not fair to ask of most people. No. I don't think, and isn't realistic. So I enjoy learning about the business side of things, I think, and I like showing up to meetings and kind of surprising people by the amount of knowledge that I have on where my fan base is located and what percentage of Spotify streams are from this particular web. You know what I mean? Like the kind of the nitty gritty.
Yeah. But that's really important, because it's all about making those connections with people, isn't it? That's why we release the songs. If we really didn't care about that, we'd just keep them on our computers, wouldn't we? With all of the admin that is required. All the emails that go behind an album release. So, yeah. I'd really love to ask you about your choice to release EPs, because I feel very old-fashioned when I look at my releases, and it's four albums, and did I do one EP? But it wasn't really an EP of different music. And I really, really respect it when people do things in different ways. So I love that people can do, obviously you can do whatever we like now, but the idea of doing several EPs.
Mm.
Do you see that as a way of kind of leading you towards an album? Are they completely separate? Tell me about the EPs.
Mm. I think earlier in my career, definitely, it was kind of I'm still finding my way. And I think I've possibly feel similarly about albums. Like, I hold them in the highest regard. And I really felt like I wasn't quite ready, I think. Mm. I had a bunch of songs, but an album just felt like such an important statement, I guess. And I felt like I was still kind of finding my way. Like the Waters EP from 2014, that was the first time I'd ever worked with a producer or worked with kind of adding a band to my voice and guitar. So it was still really new for me. And when I came to writing the second EP, I'd kind of written, I'm getting much better at this, but especially at the beginning, and not delegating very well. Like I'm not been as prolific as I would like either. So it wasn't a case of like having 50 songs and just being like, no, I'm going to release four. It was more a case of having like eight or nine and being like, well, I don't think that's really an album. Like, that's not the statement I want to make, but these four songs are mint. And I remember when I was getting the second EP mastered with a guy called John Davis at Metropolis, we were listening to it, and I've always felt like, I know that there are different kinds of EPs, right? There's EPs that are kind of short collections of songs. There are kind of extended single EPs where there might be like an acoustic version of a song, maybe a remix, maybe something else. And these always felt to me like kind of self-contained stories, very much like mini albums, I guess, but too short to be technically called mini albums. And it was only when that second EP had come out and I'd kind of gone through some different experiences in my life that meant that I was sort of in a calmer place. And so the songs were coming out more homogeneously, I guess, you know, still variety in terms of genre, but the kind of focus and the theme was all the same, which was a breakup. And it just meant that I had loads of songs that all centered around this kind of one moment in my life, showing all the different sides of it. And that felt like something worth putting together as like a collection of songs about one thing. And then the EP that came out in 2020, that was a kind of weird mix. That was a couple of songs that I loved, but that hadn't worked with the album, and like hadn't even been produced and recorded for it and rejected. Like I just knew off the bat they weren't right for it. And something new that again felt like it was very current and wasn't going to be in the future. So again, I just felt like, you know what, it's an and also being like newly indie, super independent, I was like, I don't think I can handle a whole album release at this stage, but I'll just start with like this little EP. And I feel like for a kind of shorter, for like a short statement as opposed to like a book, they feel really nice, and they're kind of a way of like testing out little pieces of things and still keeping, you know, new music coming and all your kind of relationship with people in the world, listeners or industry people or whatever it is, like keeping all of that bubbling whilst you cultivate this like big statement of what's coming next.
They seem very generous to me, because I think on the other side of things, you could be going, I'm writing all these songs, I can't give them away yet because I need them for the album. I've got to keep them for the album, you know?
Mm.
Whereas this lovely generosity of spirit, I think, to going, here are four or five or three or whatever, however many you want, songs that say, like you say, tell a story. Mm. I'll share that with you now, because don't worry, there's going to be more stuff coming. And see, that's never the way I've looked at my music making until hopefully now. Today, because I never really thought of it that way. I've always just thought, gonna make the next album. And I do have extra songs, not extra, I have songs that don't go on, that haven't gone on this new record, but they're probably not going to go on the next one either. So They should probably go together. I feel inspired to do an EP now.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
When you're writing, right, I basically feel like I don't finish songs unless I think they're worth finishing. And that's why sometimes there are songs that are finished that I really love, but they don't fit on an album, but they could work on an EP. But yeah. I'm sure that people who write is it just people who write 40 songs, I don't know, a year, are they just really happy with everyone and they finish them all, or are they not very happy with some of them? How do you write, and can you explain that to me?
I don't know, because I don't write 40 songs a year. And
yeah.
I tend to, I'm normally thinking about the next record. I'm not at the moment. This is why it's a good time to think of other ideas. But so when I was writing the last record, I started and I was like, wrote a bunch of stuff completely freely, didn't think about it, just recorded loads of demos, and they were just bits of songs. And then I got an idea of the sound I wanted to have on the record and the themes. And then once I've got the themes in my head, it's a lot more focused. It's not like I'm writing to order exactly, but the songs that are coming out or things I'm working on that fit in those themes are more likely to be finished.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then there were still some extra ones. There are some extra ones that I could record them. I mean, they're not produced and finished and mixed and everything, but I could record those fairly quickly if I decided to, that are not on this record. Is that a decent answer?
Mm.
I don't know anyone who writes 40 songs a year anyway, so I couldn't ask them that question.
No, I don't think it's... I think it's like songwriters, you know, songwriters.
Oh, real ones.
Right, Dave.
The real ones.
You know what? Maybe this is it. No, I feel like I'm going to get hate mail for this, but songwriters who don't have to deal with the release procedure.
Yes. Yes.
Which is the thing that takes up most of the time. Then you can really focus on songwriting. And that is always my aim, not songwriting in an exclusive sense, but I'm definitely trying to skew the balance a little bit more towards, I have time to have the headspace that means that I am willing to pick up a guitar for writing rather than, okay, just put it in the to-do list, write something for God's sake.
So if you could design your ideal week, how much of that time every week would you spend writing music? Realistically, because obviously you can't just say 5 days or 7 days because you've got other things to do. So how would you balance that?
I mean, in all honesty, I actually put together a plan for the perfect day a few years ago based on all of the research that I could do about humans and the things that make us happy and well-adjusted and productive. And I tweaked it a little bit at the beginning of the first lockdown because I was like, okay, now's your time, Eliza. There is nothing else to do. Surely you can complete this perfect day thing for at least a few days. And that only had in it, I think it had 2 hours of writing, but it also had 2 hours of practice, guitar practice, singing practice, which I feel like is the conduit to writing. So that was about 4 hours a day. And I feel like that is when you get caught up in something, obviously you're just carried away by it. So, you know, if you start writing a song at 2 p.m. and it's really exciting, then you could be working on it till 11 and finish it in a day. You know, sometimes that happens. And sometimes it's weeks of tweaking lyrics on one particular song for me, just every time I come to it. But I feel like 4 hours a day would be a more than healthy amount of time to be really productive. And that doesn't seem crazy when I feel like, yes, that's my official job, is songwriter. shall I tell you what else that perfect day included?
Yeah, please, because you've only got two more hours, really, or three before tea time. So,
Well, it was from waking till sleeping.
Oh, okay.
And it's the minutia of wake up in the morning, do stretches immediately. Then you have to brush your teeth before you drink any water because there's loads of bacteria inside your mouth. Then you drink lots of water to set you up for the day.
Yeah.
I'd have to look at it to get it accurate. But then, there's things like do sort of physio exercises that you always forget to do, but you really should do, and like arm exercises to make sure you're really strong for all those chugging guitar patterns and bits like that. And then it's like, make sure, stupid, simple stuff, like make sure you have a shower every day. Even though it's lockdown, it'll make you feel better, and like get dressed. That's cool. Nice to get dressed. And it was like, definitely going outside, eating, different good things, healthy, fresh things. And then there was 2 45-minute sessions of like admin work. And I downloaded this, what is it called? It's like a timer. That's the thing that went off earlier. It's like, I can't remember the word. It's like some Italian word for the way that one should work to be most productive. And it's like
in Pomodoro.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
The Pomodoro technique, I love that. That's a really good one.
Just to like stop you from, first of all, getting RSI because you just sat at your computer like this for 100 hours at a time without moving. And also because when I limit the amount of time I have to do admin in, I'm so much more focused. It's crazy. So it's just like 2 45-minute sessions of admin, and then like a shower, and then some exercise, and then shower, and then lunch. Mm. And like at that point, you've done all of your admin, you've done your physio exercises and some real exercise, you've had a shower, you're dressed, and you've eaten, and it's like 1 p.m. or 12 p.m. or something. Like you already feel like you've achieved stuff. There was also like 10 minutes of meditation, 5 minutes of just lying with like a hot towel on your face, thinking about 3 things that you would like to achieve that would make you feel like you achieved something that day.
Yeah.
3 things. They could be like, call your mum, do something else. But at the end of the day, you could be like, hey, I did good stuff today. And then there was like 2 hours of guitar practice, 2 hours of songwriting. Then it was like an hour of just reading whatever you like, reading a book, and then dinner, and then relaxation. And it's like, and you're done by 6 p.m. and then you have an evening and you go to bed early, and then I managed to do it for 2 days in total last year. 2 days where I managed to do it. Like, I mean, there were like 30 things on there, but most of them are totally achievable. But as a whole, as soon as anything comes up, anything at all, like you get one more email than you need, you're like, I've just spent 7 hours replying to this one email and haven't done any music at all. So a losing battle, but worth aspiring to.
It is. I love that. This is useless to people listening, but I'm going to hold up my time block planner. This is incredible. Okay. I'm in week 3 of this new system. It's amazing. So you might, given all the things you just said, you might enjoy it.
Okay, tell me about it.
I have the problem that it sounds like you do too. That I just think I'm going to do all these things, and I don't assign a number of hours that thing will take, because I don't really care about that. I just want to do the thing.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you start looking at emails or anything else, it's like the day's gone, because there are certain things that will just, it's like water. They'll just fill any container you give them. Yeah. Or like a horrible gas.
Yeah.
It's like you could just be sitting there for hours and hours and achieve absolutely nothing and feel rubbish and not feel like you're doing the things that you're on the planet to do. So I've been using this time blocking approach, which is a Cal Newport thing. He's amazing. And it's really interesting because every morning I write down what I'm going to do in time blocks throughout the day. And very quickly I can see, well, the day is full.
Yeah.
So whereas before I would go, I'll just do this and this and this and this, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then I'd feel like a failure at the end of every day because I didn't do 17,000 different things, Now I just am growing a lot more accepting of the container of time which I've designated to work, which is 10 till 6, which is perfectly reasonable work day.
Yeah.
And then I know I can't do everything, and then I just have to figure out what to do tomorrow. And the other thing that's really good about it is chipping away. Like you're saying about putting in 2 hours a day for writing music, for instance, that's a wonderful approach, because I think it's really easy to sort of fetishize certain things and go, I need the perfect clear day where the weather is just so.
I need absolute
silence, everyone has to have been nice to me, no bad tweets, no whatever, and then I will write with my quill pen and all this, with the perfect guitar and the correct this and the whatever, which is not how any of it works. And some of my best stuff has been written in just really little chunks of time.
Completely off a hoof. Yeah.
So I think that's really good to just go, well, I'm going to have a regular session that I book in. And it doesn't have to be every day. It could be once a week from 7 till 8 p.m. on a Tuesday night. I'm going to sit down and write whatever it is. And that's how people get things done.
Yep. Yeah, chipping away. You're so right. And being realistic is, just affects your motivation so much as well, because if you're just endlessly toiling at something. And I think actually that might help with delegation as well, because, for example, on this artwork, I've spent hours. I mean, I honestly feel like I might have spent 150 hours like tweaking, just going back and forth, trying different things, tweaking this, tweaking that over the last 6 months. And it's like, if I'd sat myself down and been like, you are going to spend this many hours on this, would you like to delegate them to somebody else? We'll do it in like five. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that if I like took on that kind of slightly more responsible, time responsible view of things, that it would be a lot easier to be like, yes, do you know what? It's not worth that much. It doesn't make any sense to spend that much time on it. Let's delegate.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing, though, isn't
it? Yes. Okay, I'm going to try and employ that moving forward, though. This is good. I'm learning a lot.
It's really, really good. And like you're saying, for keeping the energy up for anything as well. So I find what I've been finding from it is if I only allow an hour for something creative, then I'm just sort of not just getting into it, but I really don't want to stop at 1 hour.
Yeah.
Whereas if I allow two, it's okay. Anything over two, and I just kind of lose the will to do anything, even if it's like writing a song or something. I just start feeling like, I can't do it. I can't do it anyway. Who am I? I'm rubbish. I suck at everything. Whereas if I just kept it to 2 hours, then gone, cool, now I move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
I'd be feeling quite positive, and then I can come back the next day and do more.
Yeah. And you come back with kind of fresh ears and stuff. I can imagine a lot of benefits to that.
I would love to know, what is success to you, and have you ever experienced it?
Oh, interesting. I think I've always defined success as in terms of what I wanted for my career, I guess, and what I thought I would consider making me a success in music would be to have a sustainable career as a musician. However that came about, really, be it through live shows, be it through selling records, be it through writing music, whichever way, to make my living through music and to kind of not be scrimping and saving and wondering if one could afford milk every few weeks. I think that that's kind of still in my head as a successful moment. Like it does make, I mean, I've always had second jobs like all through my career, I guess. And I think that, I mean, this year's a bit of a funny one, obviously, because loads of revenue has dried up because of not touring and not, you know, PRS associated with touring and all the kind of extra bits that are very helpful. And also not having released an album in a couple of years, like the kind of royalties and things like that that would hopefully be coming through are very much drying up.
Yes.
But I feel like I've been applying for quite a lot of funding through lockdown, and it gave me a real opportunity as part of my applications, I guess, to kind of assess where I was and where I'd gotten to, and you know, what I'd achieved and what I still really wanted to achieve. And I feel like I'm an ambitious human. I know that there are lots of things that I would like to achieve in life, but in terms of calling something a success, I feel like there's obviously loads of stuff that I still want to do with music, and I've got a relatively small audience, and I've, you know, met relatively few people, and I've not toured America probably. You know, there's loads of stuff that I haven't done, but I feel kind of successful with what I've done so far in terms of what I wanted to achieve and how I feel about the quality of the music and the kind of connective experience that I've had with people and what I've shared with the world. Weirdly, I was listening. Last night, I was trying to check something about like the old releases versus the new album, and I ended up listening to. I'm just gonna compare it all for like mixes and masters. And I listened through my whole bloody catalogue, and then I listened to the new album off the back of it, and I was like, oh, this is actually like really interesting. I can hear like the changes, and it's nice to be so far away from some of the early releases and be like, oh, that thing I'm obsessed about didn't matter. So stop obsessing now, because in a few years you won't care.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But if, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think you can find success in small things, but I think even with the way that I would have defined success my whole career, I feel kind of successful, but obviously I still feel like, especially with the last year, sustainability is an ever evolving question. Yeah. And just because I've managed to similarly spend a couple of years just kind of running my business and living my life based on musical income, that doesn't, you know, I moved to Cornwall and I was like, well, I'm just going to get another, I'll start work in this local community centre because it's always helpful. And I kind of still wouldn't and can't, and especially after the last year, rule it out in the future. So the sustainability part of it is still kind of a question. I think it would take quite a lot, but I think in any career, it would take an absolute whack of money to feel like, okay, cool, well, this is like sustainable for all time. So I don't know if that's ever really going to be like that itch is going to be scratched.
I feel the same way about jobs. I've always freelanced and done different things throughout my career up until 2 years ago, and then when the pandemic started, I just thought, oh fuck, like if I need to get another job because I'm not earning enough to live on, it's going to be really, really hard now. I'm sorry that sounds really selfish, because of course I'm more concerned about people losing their existing jobs. Please don't think I'm a selfish person, people listening, but of course you think of yourself first.
And you're so used to having other jobs, it's like the first you know, when all that stuff about musicians came out and everyone was like, excuse me, we all pretty much have second jobs anyway, so if you're telling us we should retrain, like we got loads of skills.
Oh yeah, what did you get for the government retraining questionnaire? What job did you get given?
I actually didn't do it.
You didn't do it?
No, I didn't do it.
I got stunt performer.
Say that again.
Stunt performer.
What on earth is a thunt performer?
No, stunt.
Oh, stunt.
Am I lisping? Maybe I'm lisping. Stunt performer. Which I think is a highly skilled, highly trained job you can't just get into overnight. So if they're expecting me to suddenly become a stunt performer, it's suddenly going to take me about 10 years, I think, to get to a level where I could charge for that job. So I don't know how I'm going to do that.
But yeah, that's
anyway, that was weird. But yeah, it's been... I feel the same way in terms of like, so what, I might have to do some other work in future. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's nice not to have to, because like it like I was saying, this job is like a gas. It fills every nook and cranny of time. Mm. I've never worked so hard as I am at the moment.
Yeah,
and it's all for the new album and everything. And I love it all, but I just don't see how, every now and again, I just think, how on earth did I do this alongside other jobs before? Because that's what I did.
Yeah,
I think I had more energy. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm confused by it. And I love how careful you, well, I don't know if you've been careful, but when I look at your back catalogue and I listen through to it, it is all of such high quality.
Thank you.
You've been releasing music for 8 years, but you haven't put loads of stuff out for the sake of it. I don't see the point of doing that. So, yeah, you should be very proud of your catalogue.
Thank you so much. That means a lot coming from you. Thank you.
I love it. And I love hearing you evolve over time.
It's ever changing.
Yeah. And I love that you still like your early stuff, because I think that is important as well.
I feel like this this new record is, I feel like even more of a change actually than any previous record, but I'm definitely still 100% like in the middle of it. So it's quite hard to be objective about it. But yeah, it's got some real different influences, I think, that I've kind of allowed to come out. And I'm in a really different place in my life now, I guess, than I was then. So, and I think it shows.
When's it coming out? Does it have a date?
It has a provisional date, which
if it's secret, you don't have to tell me.
No. Well, okay. In the summer. Much I can say, in the summer. And the first song is just a few weeks away.
Yay!
Yay! What about you?
Oh, mine's going to be in May.
Amazing.
And the first single is this Friday.
Oh, yeah, cool. Okay, and but that'll be 3 weeks in the past.
Yes.
Is that right?
3 weeks ago, you've all hopefully heard it.
Yeah.
And I can tell you now, 3 weeks ago, people. 3 weeks later, people? I don't know. That I'm nervous about it because I think people who have been following my career so far might be upset there's not a guitar on this song.
Ooh, but interesting.
There are guitars, plenty of guitars on the rest of the record. And I will make no apologies for the songs I've chosen to put on the record and the song that I choose to put out as a single because I obviously love it. That's why I'm putting it out.
Yeah.
But I hope I'm not about to ditch a bunch of people by accident.
Mm.
Basically.
That is a nerve-wracking thing, isn't it? Do you have... Yeah. Basically, whenever I'm producing songs, always start with the guitar. That's where it all starts. Mm. And then gradually build up the song. And then at some point on every song with every producer or even working on it on my own or anything like that, at some stage, the guitar always gets muted. And my first reaction is always like, this sounds way better. This sounds way better. What are we doing? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It should be a piano ballad. Oh, my God. We should take this out. Okay. Blah, blah, blah. And then about a month of tinkering later, it's like, should we just try putting the guitar back in? Okay, let's try it. Okay, yeah, this sounds like a Liza Shadd. Okay, there we go. There is always this thing, though. And sometimes when I hear it, I'm like, oh, God, if I'd just been a different kind of artist, then I could just never have guitars in. And it would sound so much like clearer. And then eventually when I kind of I'm in a space where I can listen to it and relate it to me properly without it just being like this thing divorced, like this pressured thing in the studio. It's like, oh no, of course it needs guitar. But not always.
Well, this was an exercise. There's a couple of songs. Wait. There's two songs on this. There are two songs on this album that don't have guitar at all. And there's one that nearly didn't have any, but then I put some in. But yeah, I was going out of my way to try to leave more space. So these were experiments that ended up being songs that ended up on the album. So for me, it's a really logical step. And it's a step probably more towards the kind of music I listen to now anyway. But I also love guitars and love putting loads of guitars on things. So
yeah.
I will also do that.
Variation is fine. I was really pleased, but basically from having the same worry, I guess, I was really pleased when I put out a couple of piano versions of album tracks that the reception that they got from the kind of diehard, kind of more rocker, grungier fans who are always really excited by the guitars. They really enjoyed the piano versions as well. So I mean, it's different because they're versions, but I'm sure they'll embrace it.
Well, the thing is, people are very multifaceted and have massive inner worlds.
Yeah.
and they don't just like one kind of music. And also, if you don't like it, that's fine. It's just not for you. That's fine. But I suppose I'm keen that people know that there are guitars on the rest of the album. I haven't gone electro.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, I haven't just like thrown my guitar away.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just that this is what this song sounds like. There you go. So well, it'll just be interesting. But I am a little bit nervous because it's exciting.
Yeah,
and
of course.
That's a good feeling. It's nice.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the internet in relation to your music career?
I think I have a lot to be grateful for to the internet. I guess in terms of sharing the music, I mean, initially just amongst like friends and family and Facebook people and then growing via sort of press, I guess, and online radio stations and social media. It's been a massive help, especially as an independent artist. I think it's been hugely useful in terms of having a lot of control and kind of self-promotional opportunities. I do find there is and discovering other music, you know, through SoundCloud or through Spotify or through, you know, loads of different mediums. I do feel like there is something of a love-hate relationship with social media. I find that when it is about connecting with people because of some amazing thing that's happened or just some funny thing that's happened or whatever it is, the kind of original intention of it, I guess, I really like that. And I actually started up a Patreon recently, and what I've really enjoyed about it is that it kind of reminds me of social media in the early days, where it's almost like a private place where you can just share what is happening in the moment without lots of like self-filtering and wondering how it's going to appeal to like current fans and new fans and industry folks and blah, 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 you know, like all these different facets of kind of your public social media stuff. I found it's actually super liberating and like really helps grow the kind of connective side of things that you can have with fans through online experiences, I guess. So that's been really interesting and kind of mitigated some of the hate side of social media, I guess, because it feels even more authentic, I guess. And then I would say that the internet has really come into its own for me personally this year because of live streaming. And I'd never done a live stream before last year, but when we had to cancel our kind of big London show, I decided to just do one on Instagram Live and invite the supports who were due to play at the show to feature on it. And it was just really fun and really, after I finished, I felt the kind of, whew, okay, well, kind of feels a little bit like finishing a gig. And I feel like I've done something and I've done one every week ever since. So that's we're on amazing. Number. Yep, it's been a commitment, but it's also been quite relaxed and quite easy. You know, I've kind of thought about it at the time, but I decided not to set it up on like YouTube and Facebook streams and all of this, and use any fancy software. Like it's my phone, it's Instagram Live. I know that there's good Wi-Fi, but occasionally I've been traveling or something, so I've done them from like the backseat of cars or from this random really cool rock by the services on the motorway. And I really feel like it's helped me stay connected with playing live and playing to people, and it's given me an opportunity to try out a lot of the new songs from the album, and it's also given me a lot of space and time to play the kind of quieter songs that I often don't play at shows because, you know, I've got this whole band with me. It's a really expensive thing to put on. So it's like, well, obviously I'm going to use them for every song and we're going to make as much noise as possible. And the idea of playing a few stripped back numbers is like, and does that make sense? No. But for the live streams, it's like, well, they're all stripped back. So I've been really grateful to have good Wi-Fi for that. And I think that that's helped me actually in terms of applying for funding and stuff, because I can be like, look, I've really, really adapted to this modern live gig world. Mm-hmm. And something I'm planning for the next few months, with, thanks to some help from the Arts Council particularly, is like a kind of live, like a big live stream event, kind of like a TV program crossed with some big videos with like a 10 piece of musicians crossed with some of the really intimate like smaller moments, and trying to celebrate all of that and the kind of live industry and all the people that make it possible, like my bandmates, the crewmates, getting a film team together, and celebrating the ways to connect online.
That's so lovely. I saw that you'd been successful with your bid, so well done. That's not
thanks
easy
so much. No, it's bloody not. it's such a long I think we previously with management and label and stuff, we've applied to every source of funding under the sun, and really grateful to have been lucky a few different times, but having applied, you know, three times the number of successes for sure. So it's definitely something I would highly recommend to any musicians. Yeah,
me too. I've had a few funding things, and I honestly didn't know about funding till halfway through releasing all of my albums, and then I started applying for things, and it is possible. I think Arts Council England's probably one of the better ones to go for, because I mean, you should go for all of them, of course, but I think the specifically music ones are so competitive, and there's only, you know, there's only so many spots people can get. But I've found better success with Arts Council myself as well.
I think really they used good. To say that they didn't get very many applications from musicians. They kind of had a drive a couple of years ago where they were like, guys, nobody in music ever applies to us. And even looking actually at some, when I was applying, I was looking at like the kind of projects and people that had been successful, I think, from the year before. And it was like two or three musical acts in a list of maybe 50 people. So it is, the application form is fairly off-putting. and you need to have so much of it sorted and such a good kind of planning head, I guess, but that is definitely worth the time.
Yeah, of course.
In this instance, definitely.
Yeah. And I think, like you were saying earlier, that when you were doing a funding bid, it does make you think about how far you've got in your career. And I would echo that. So you, because they ask you, what have you achieved? What are your goals? I think it's easy to not ask yourself those questions a lot. And so having those moments to kind of sum it up is really good. It kind of reminds you that you're doing good things, which I think we need to do for ourselves.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's so easy to always be focused on like the next achievement or the next goal or sort of lamenting like, no, but I wanted this to do this well, or I wanted this to end in this relationship, whatever. And taking stock is very healthy, I think.
I read a really interesting and good thing recently that I'm trying to remind myself of. I should write it down and put it on the wall, to be honest, about how the quote, comparison is the thief of joy, is one of my favourites as well. Mm-hmm. But leading on from that, the idea that you should only be comparing yourself to yourself yesterday, not to anybody else, because they're all on a different path. You don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You're a different person to that person.
Yeah,
you probably won't achieve the same things as this random person you've chosen as your arbiter of success. Yeah. Compare yourself to you yesterday and keep doing that. I think that's much more healthy. That's what I'm trying to do this year as well. I've got a lot of plans to feedback to myself this year. Which three pieces of your own work would you recommend for new listeners?
I would maybe start with, and these are probably by no means the most popular, so I should probably go with the most popular, but I'm going to go with something else. So I would start with a track called All Right Again, which is on the first EP, first official EP, Waters. It's, I guess, a down-tempo, slow, vibey little number, very sort of personal and intimate, but just a lovely song, I think. So that would be a good place to start. And then on the next EP run, I would go... Would I go for that? I think I... It's tricky because it's so different. Like, I was like, shall I go for the drum and bass style one, or shall I go for the electronic one, or shall I go for the kind of massive grunge ballad one? I reckon I go for the grunge ballad one. So go for Make It Go Away on the Run EP. And then I would probably go for Just Goes to Show Off, the album, because let's put in one of the most popular ones at least. I guess that would be as good as that would give you kind of a historical roundup and not really bring you into present day, but that's fine.
I was watching the Just Goes to Show video before we spoke today, and there's something so beautiful about it. There's about the feeling of it at the end. I'm not going to ruin it for anyone and say what it is. You should just go, it'd be ridiculous for me to describe a music video on a podcast. Like, that's just like a weird world I'm not going to go into. Please go watch it. It brought a tear to my eye. I'm not ashamed to say. It was lovely.
Nice.
That I was expecting emotions today.
It was the funnest. It was such a fun shoot. It's got loads of people involved. And it's all quite simple, but like a lot of sort of stuff going on sort of behind the scene. Good. I'm glad you like that.
Yeah. I love that. I love it. I'm excited to see these new videos as well, because
they're much smaller in scope, obviously, because the lockdown is basically just me in them.
Same.
Yeah, I like them. They're fun. Yeah.
I was shooting my new video in the living room on the weekend, and it's
nice.
I'm not going to tell anyone what it is, because you should just watch it. It might be out by now. Don't know. Future people, future listeners. And finally, I've got a new question I haven't asked before. Finally, I'd love to know, what is the one piece of advice you'd give to anyone wanting to start a creative project of their own this year?
Well, I think there's a lot of things I could say based off the things we've chatted about today. But I think the main advice would be, just start. Just actually start it, and maybe block out, a kind of manageable amount of time every week. Like we were saying, a couple of hours a week, even, just to get you going, and commit to it and stick to it, and you'll achieve more than you thought you would, I think, quite quickly. But the most important thing is, actually start.
That's such a beautiful way to end. Thank you so much for talking to me, Eliza.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I hope you get to meet in real life one day. I remember watching you speak at like a conference once. I think you were on a panel. I can't remember.
I did used to do those, yeah.
I think at the Roundhouse, it was like a...
Oh, God, that's years ago, yeah.
Years and years and years ago. And I was like, so cool. She's doing everything for herself. That's so cool.
Aww, thank you so much.
So it's nice to talk to you properly.
Oh, wow. Well, same to you.
Yeah. I look forward to hearing your album and I hope I get to see you live one day as well.
All right back at you. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. So excited for your new record. It's going to be great.
Thank you very much.
I thoroughly enjoyed that conversation and I hope you're now in the mood to dive into Eliza's musical world. As always, I've made a deluxe show notes page on my website at penfriend.rocks/Eliza with videos and links to the songs she mentioned. I do hope you're enjoying this podcast. If so, and you feel inspired to help spread the word by sharing the link with a friend, subscribing, or leaving a rating or a review, then, well, you're one of my favourite people. Thanks. If you've enjoyed the music in this show, pretty much all of it appears on my new album Exotic Monsters, which you can hear a little taster of at penfriend.rocks/new album. The theme song to this podcast is actually a song called Cancel Your Hopes, and the new video for that went up on YouTube last Friday. You've got plenty to explore, so I'll leave you now, but I'll be back next Wednesday with another deep conversation about creativity, grit, and determination. Till then, thanks for listening, enjoy the spring sunshine, and take good care. Keep a kiss for me, 'cause we all fall down under.